This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. We have John Conrad coming up about a half hour from now. Everything you wanted to know about shipping, naval shipping, merchant marine stuff. I love that stuff. And he has some eye-popping things to say. He's a captain. We'll talk to Captain John Conrad about a half hour from now. All that. In fact, we're going to dig into the CIA, FBI stuff, some emails, all that and more coming up this next hour of the Jesse Kelly Show as I have returned to work. Now, let's talk about this. One final word on this collective freakout. They're freaking out about USAID, but it's not only USAID. Remember, I want you to really, really remember this. That is just the tip. That's just one of the first organizations that has been shut down by the Trump administration. They are going after the roots of everything. And that's why they're all freaking out. It's not just USAID. It's the CIA.
The Wall Street Journal is reporting the CIA has reportedly just offered a buyout to its entire workforce. Everyone in the agencies telling employees late today they can quit their jobs and receive about 8 months of pay and benefits.
CIA? What? FBI, too. Rachel Maddow's crying. What about the FBI?
But beyond that, they appear to be targeting all the FBI agents who were involved in any of the cases brought against January 6th rioters. If they are going to try to purge every FBI agent who took any part in any one of these well over 1,000 cases, that's...
Listen to how offended they are. And you know why they're offended? I touched on this a little bit the first hour. You know why they're offended? They're afraid, of course. They're afraid. They're angry. Their power base is eroding because their power base has always been holding on to positions in government power. But they're also just flat out offended. In the same way you would be offended if one of your jobs at the office was to staple the papers before every big meeting. You staple the papers. Not glorious, not glamorous, but for 30 years, you've worked in the same office, and that's been your job. Staple the paper. You're the only one who does it. No one else even has a stapler. Hey, staple the papers, and that's your job. You've simply gotten used to that being your job. You're used to being the only one in the office who does that job. That's part of your critical role. And then you wake up one day, and it's time for a meeting, and the boss introduces you to the new employee nobody likes. Hey, let me introduce you all to Corey. What's Corey's job? We brought Corey in. He's going to do a bunch of stuff, but one of the things he's going to do, he's going to staple papers before the meeting. How hurt would you be? Offended. That's what Democrats across the United States of America are currently experiencing as they watch Republicans finally, for the first time in my life, figure out power, where it actually lies, and how to take it back. What you're hearing from them about USAID is the exact tone of voice. It's the exact way they were freaking out when you, the individual citizen, started showing up at school board meetings. We weren't even yelling yet. We just showed up at school board meetings. Or I should say we weren't even running for office yet. We were yelling. All of a sudden, wait, Republicans are showing up? Normal parents are showing up to school board meetings? This is how many pieces of audio did I play for you of not some activist like me, a normal parent showing up at a school board meeting, some dad saying, dude, look at this. This is porn in the library. You're showing my daughter porn in kindergarten. Why is this here? And how many bits of audio have I played for you about city council members threatening him with arrest, shutting down the school board meeting? But we're done for the day. We can't do that. How many times did I play for you how offended some card-carrying communist was? They're offended for a variety of reasons, but one of the main reasons they're offended is we've woken up. We're not supposed to care about these positions of power. We're not supposed to figure out that that's how they fund everything. We're not supposed to figure out that's how they control everything. It's only them. It's only them who's supposed to understand power and how to seize it and how to wield it. And it's only them. And the fact that we are waking up to that has these people freaking mortified. That's why you can go after a government agency that 99% of Americans didn't know existed a week ago, and you'll have Democrat senator after Democrat House members talking about being at war.
We will not take this. We will fight back.
Fight back. Fight back.
And as I close out, because I know we've been out here for a long time, yeah. And God damn, shut down the Senate!
At war? Over U.S. aid? Why would you be at war? Because you can send out executive orders to shut down the DEI Department of the Pentagon all day long. The communist understands that that's a temporary setback, but he'll just start up that same department when he goes back in. But if you actually shut down and expose to the American people the levels of government corruption put into place by Democrats over decades, well, what you're actually doing there is threatening what genuinely matters, and that's why they're yelping when they were awfully quiet before. Without force, without government-funded force, taxpayer-funded force, without force, the communist can never gain power anywhere, and he knows it. And that's why he seeks out power so aggressively. He must grab it and he must use it, because without it, the revolution simply dies on the vine. Jesse the Oracle Kelly. By the way, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Jesse the Oracle Kelly, you've been talking about looting the Treasury for as long as I can remember. With this new administration, we're seeing the first glimpses into the depths of corruption that has begun going on for decades. It's far, far worse than we, maybe not you, ever imagined. Global schemes to gut the country financially and enrich the elites. Now, look, it's worse than I've ever imagined either. I joke about being an oracle. I'm not all-knowing. I know it's bad. I've maybe been ahead of some of the politicians in knowing how bad it is, but how deep does this go? Well, okay, there's an article out here. It's worth talking about. It's from Town Hall, which I love. But Town Hall, they have a headline here that says, the impressive number of federal workers who have taken Trump's buyout option. Hey, Chris, I know a rough number. Get me an exact number, if you don't mind, the number of federal employees, please. Just get me that real quickly. So the headline is, the impressive number of federal workers who've taken Trump's buyout. And you know what that number is? 20,000. About 1% of the federal workforce. 20,000. Okay. Apparently the Trump White House has a target of 5 to 10%. So we've gotten rid of 1% of the federal workforce. The goal is a removal of 5 to 10% of the federal workforce. Okay. So let's just think about these numbers. We'll call it 2 million employees. It's closer to 3. Last I thought, I would have guessed 3. Chris says it's 2.7 to 3.4. You know what? We'll call it 3. We'll call it 3. That's number right there in the middle. We found that sweet spot. So walk with me here. 3 million federal employees. I'm underselling this, underselling it. We'll say 90% of those are Democrats. Okay? So that's 2.7 million workers who are Democrats. Let's be extra, extra generous and say half of those federal Democrats, yeah, they vote Democrat, but they're not full-blown communists. And that's being very, very generous. But let's say we have 1.3 million communist activists inside the federal government, from inside the federal government. We've gotten 20,000 of them to quit. Good for Trump for that. They want, sounds like they want another 100,000 more. Okay, that's good. But I admit I had to drop algebra from community college a few times, but that leaves over a million communist activists still in positions of power in the federal government. That was me being generous. Remember, those are generous numbers. I just walked you through the math. My point is not to be a Debbie Downer. My point is they've been doing this for so, so long. The roots are so, so deep. We are just starting. You think this is bad? We're starting to glimpse just the tip. This is just the tip. There is so much more to come after this. Trust me on that. Have you given to Tunnel to Towers yet? I should say, have you signed up to give to Tunnel to Towers yet? Tunnel to Towers is that wonderful organization that rose from the ashes of 9/11, having suffered the loss they suffered, and decided they wanted to do something for all those wonderful fallen first responder families, all those Gold Star families. Something. How do you comfort a widow, an orphan? What? I don't know that there is a perfect way, but making sure she knows financially she's not up against it sure helps. They pay off mortgages for these people, built an entire community for these people so they can come together and heal together. And all they've ever asked for from us is $11 a month. You sign up to give it automatically, you will never know it's gone. T2T.org. $11 a month. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Jesse Kelly Show. You're welcome.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday, a hump day. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Also, Jasmine Crockett, the Democrat Party, will... they're in deep, deep trouble. And yes, I remembered Chris, Captain Conrad. Yeah, I did. I kind of remembered. John Conrad's coming up in 10 minutes to talk about shipping and all kinds of stuff. I remembered before Jewish producer Chris did. He didn't remind me. Anyway, Democrats have a problem, you see. They have a couple different problems. The first massive problem they have right now is the Trump administration, Trump 2.0, after getting shot and arrested, have figured out exactly how evil communists are, and they decided they're going to go after the roots of communism. Not just the surface stuff like normal. They're going to go after the government-funded network of communism that has existed in this country for a very long time. And this comes before they go after the Department of Education. Donald Trump promised many times on the campaign trail, and not just in the Republican primary, in the general election, Donald Trump promised to destroy the Department of Education. I am hearing word now that's coming quickly. Can you imagine what Democrats are going to do? Because that's the source of really all their power. What are they going to do if they lose government funding for communist activism, and if they lose the ability to turn Aiden, Jaden, and Braden against you? Now, destroying the Department of Education is not enough to do that, but what do they do? And when you combine that with the Jasmine Crockett's of the world, meaning Jasmine Crockett is one of these people, one of these squad types, and the important thing to know about her is she's from a district that's all Democrats, so she's in the safest Democrat seat in the world, and she can run her fat mouth as loud as humanly possible and say the most despicable things humanly possible, and she's always going to get reelected. The problem for the Democrat Party is they're being assaulted. Their funding is being assaulted as Trump and Elon go after the government funding, but they're being assaulted by another entity too. It's from the inside. They're being assaulted from the ones on the inside who they're blocking any Democrat move to the middle or to normalcy. I don't think Democrats are going to move to the middle necessarily, but in order to tone down how they talk and try to sound more normal, try to sound remotely palatable to an American, a normal American, they have to change some things. You have to change how you talk about things. You have to change how you speak demographically, honestly. The Democrats have become so enamored with DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, that now white men especially, and some white women too, but white men, they feel like the Democrat Party hates them. That's not just me talking. Go look at the poll numbers. Go look at not only the poll numbers, go look at the trends. If you are a white man, not just an activist like me, if you are a normie, a white man in this country, really men in general, but white men especially, the poll number tracks this way, white men hate Democrats because they think Democrats hate them. Well, if you're a Democrat, well, set aside the morality of that and how you should want everybody to get involved. Set aside all that. Let's just talk politically about taking power. Nationally, if you're a Democrat, you don't get there without white men. You don't. It's not possible. And Democrats, in part, acknowledge this when they went and grabbed Tim Walz from Minnesota. As dumb and useless and weird as Tim Walz was, the Harris campaign, remember, we had the internals. We said, we even played for you the pollster who said, we're losing men. We're losing men quickly, especially white men. We're losing them. So they went and grabbed Tim Walz to try to mitigate the white men losses. They know they are not going to be able to win national elections if white men think Democrats hate them. And that brings us to Jasmine Crockett. Oh, and let me clarify, the Democrats, the older ones, the Nancy Pelosi's, the Chuck Schumer's, they know what I just said is true. Internally, they're talking about it. We got to find a way to get white men back. We got to stop demonizing white men. We got to stop doing this. But Jasmine, you see, she's in a really safe seat. So while the national Democrats are trying to figure out how to keep the DEI, but let white men know we don't hate them, well, Miss Glued On Eyelashes has a different idea.
It is really, really a sad day.
That was the complete wrong one. Hate myself. Here it is.
I am tired of the white tears. Listen, if you are competent, you are not concerned. When I walk into Congress every single day, you know why I don't feel a way and why you can't make me doubt who I am? Is because I know that I had to work 10 times as hard as they did just to get into the seat. When you look and you compare me to Marjorie Taylor Greene or me to Lauren Boebert, there is no comparison. And that is the life that we have always lived. So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys that have been beaten out by people that historically have had to work so much.
Look, you could roll your eyes and get mad and throw things at the radio. That's fine. But you know what that is? That's electoral suicide. That's what that is. If they don't find a way to shut that woman up, they will find a way to primary her. For a Democrat Party dying to win back Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, this is suicide.
I am tired of the white tears. Listen, if you are competent.
Chris, go ahead and write this one down. You will see in multiple political ads next election cycle, probably in the midterms, you will see some version of this interview with Jasmine Crockett.
I am tired of the white tears. Listen, if you are...
She's writing Republican ads for them. Now, the last thing I'll say about Jasmine Crockett is I hate seeing her and Lauren Boebert fight. I would like it if those two would just hug it out, maybe on television. That's all I'm going to say. Also, you should save a baby's life tonight. As long as we're on this subject, abortion usually comes up. Abortion's disgusting. It hasn't slowed down. And the bad news is, we're 2 years after Roe versus Wade was overturned, it's picked up. Because now you can use the pill. Now you just kill the baby in your house. How do we fight back against that kind of easily accessible evil? You could just murder your baby in your home from the comfort of your couch. How do you do that? That's what preborn does. They give out free ultrasounds. the ultimate tool in the fight for life. You want to save a baby's life? It costs $28. That's what that ultrasound costs. Preborn is giving these women, women who are about to abort their babies, giving them $28. Well, giving them a free ultrasound that costs $28. She hears the heartbeat. She chooses life almost every time. Go to preborn.com/Jesse and save a life. Sponsored by Preborn. Captain John Conrad. Next.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday, a wonderful hump day. And as promised, I have Captain John Conrad joining us now to talk about actually a couple different things. I want to talk a lot of shipping with him. He has a lot of thoughts about that. But he also put up something pretty fascinating, wonderful read online today. I want to lead off with this. Hey, John, I call it the system, but I always say the system speaks with one voice. You turn on the news and this professor is saying the same thing as CNN, who's saying the same thing as MSNBC, is who's saying the same thing as Chuck Schumer. John, you want to explain that phenomenon to me?
Yes, I would love to. And I was just after the show, if you can go to my Twitter, John Conrad, I'm writing a reply because a few hours later, the New York Times got their number one hitman, Ezra Klein, to counter my calling them manipulative fools. What they do is you used to have independent journalists, and I'm a ship reporter. I report about ships. So this is how I got that insight. I run gcaptain.com, a maritime news site, aware of the destruction of independent journalists. So the New York Times used to have a doc reporter, and that doc reporter had a huge Rolodex, contact list of experts in the field that let him get these deep sources. But starting, in the 2000s with budget cuts and Craigslist, and then Obama really nailed this, they got rid of those specialists. So there's no longer like a treasury journalist or a maritime journalist, and they got these generalists. So what they have is these bureau chiefs around the country who are looking at local news, and when they see something that might hurt the narrative or explode around the country, they send it to the editor of the New York Times, who has an editorial meeting with the top editors, and they decide on the narrative. How are they going to spin this story to make it usually best for the Democrats? And what they do then is because these generalists, you know, these reporters who went to Columbia Journalism School, but they don't have deep connections that the specialists had, they kind of preform who the sources are. So they give the journalist, they don't outright say, we want you to tilt this left or lie about it. They give them a predetermined list of sources. You know, someone like Bill McChrystal is a good example. Talk to this guy about it. And they can kind of flavor how the bent will be. So if they want to be hard on China, they'll take someone, a PhD from a approved think tank that's a little hard on China. If they want to go easy, they'll pick a source that is easy on China. And then so the journalist has, you know, the story that they stole from the local news or wherever it was. And then they have, you know, this guidance from the editor. And then on top of that, they have these sources that are going to, manipulate the story. And then occasionally, it's usually organic. They push it out, and then everyone, all of the Hollywood and the media and the bloggers and all the left on X, they read the New York Times to come up with the narrative, and then they go out and they distribute it. And how they control this narrative, because everyone's independent, is basic reward, carrot and stick. So if you copy the narrative, you get awards. You get a Pulitzer Prize or a book deal, or maybe it's just travel to the Paris office to work on a thing. If you buck the narrative, as a number have done, then they are going to punish you. First, they're going to, you know what, reassign you to the local news in New York, you know, that people don't read. And if you continue to buck the narrative, they may fire you. And then if you continue to buck the narrative, then they are going to put you on the Wikipedia blacklist. And once you're on the Wikipedia blacklist, I know because I'm on it, then Google takes that blacklist, sucks it up, and every time there's a search result for an article, well, when there's one by John Conrad, they're going to bury that on page 3 because the Wikipedia blacklist says. And so there's no fingerprint because Google didn't say, hey, we didn't penalize John or anyone else for being anti-narrative. You know, we got it from Wikipedia, and the Wikipedia comes up with these weird sources. You know, for me, they said I spammed it. I wrote too many maritime articles on Wikipedia. And so they said I linked it. That's how I got blacklisted. But the thing's different. And then if you're really bad, someone like our friend Jack Bozek, you know, they'll say you're a Russian agent and they'll go on a full smear campaign, which in his case is ridiculous because he's literally a U.S. Navy intel officer.
Speaking with John Conrad, Captain John Conrad, obviously a shipping man, but I wanted to ask him about this first and foremost. I swear we are going to get to shipping at some point, John, but I found your writing on this to be really, really fascinating and revealing. It's something I've talked about a lot. So it sounds to me like what you're describing, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, is what a lot of people, myself included, refer to as the hive mind, how it's not necessarily one human being or one entity deciding things, but the hive mind itself has decided these are the carrots, and if you choose these carrots, you will be elevated to higher, ritzier positions, even go to Paris one day. If you reject our carrots, then you will get the whip, and you will find yourself covering the winter moon in Anchorage, Alaska in January. Do I have that right?
Absolutely correct, but it is more centralized than that. So you have, you know, it's like the mafia with the capo dons and the thing. And here, you know, in my example, I say 4-star generals, New York Times, BBC, and, you know, in other countries too, Der Spiegel, these liberal things, you know, they're all meeting and talking at conferences and kind of predicting this, right? And then they write, they're kind of independent. So whoever is controlling it, the blob, the elite, doesn't tell them. It's more corrective action. So if the New York Times gets something wrong that the blob doesn't like, you know, someone within the deep state, maybe it's Obama, we don't know who, will call the editor, and he'll call all his friends at the other magazine and say, hey, we got to change this narrative. So they like as light a touch as possible, right? So there are no fingerprints. And they trust these 4-star generals, New York Times editor-in-chief, NPR editor-in-chief, to kind of handle things on their own. And they only step in when there's corrective action, and of course to punish the low-level soldiers, the journalists out in the field.
How about that? He is John Conrad. Make sure you go read his stuff. Now let's shift gears and actually get on what I told you I wanted to talk about, and that is something you are an expert on, shipping. I'm going to ask the most open-ended question you've ever been asked, but what are your shipping concerns right now for us?
Oh, massive concern. So China not only has a larger navy than the United States, and everyone, you know, says, well, the U.S. has more missiles or we got better training. That's true. But how do we, if there's a war overseas, people forget the troops have to get over there. And if there's contested airspace, you can't fly them, so you have to ship them over there. Well, China has over 3,000 merchant ships carrying supplies, bullets, food, fuel, and everything else. The United States only has 83 in international service, and none of these ships have any defenses against drones or missiles, like the SeaWiz Gatling gun on the Navy. We don't have any of that. So as we're seeing in the Red Sea, we can't even get the ships past the Houthis. So how, if we can't get our commercial 83, which isn't enough, past the Houthis, how are they going to get over to Taiwan or Okinawa to bring the soldiers and the bullets and everything else if there is a war?
3,000 ships to our 83, and our 83 sound like they're virtually defenseless. I tell you what, John, I already kept you on for 10. Do you have another few minutes on the back end of this break to answer a couple more shipping questions? If not, that's fine.
I have as much time as you need, Jesse. Perfect. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
We are going to talk about our shipping in a little bit more depth here in just a moment. Before I get to that, there's been all kinds of history talk tonight. It's all kinds of history talk, period, on this show. You know, I love it. Probably that's one of the main reasons I fell in love with Hillsdale College. Hillsdale College is one of those things where my disgust with the university system was rising at the same time my impassionate love for history was rising. And then you see this wonderful university that every parent wants their kids to get into, Hillsdale. Well, I can't get your kids into Hillsdale. I probably can't get mine into Hillsdale. But I can give you a free education from Hillsdale, at least some of it. They're offering more than 40 free online courses for all of us. Not just for kids, young, old, all of us. There's no cost. Hillsdale.edu/Jesse. You want to go nerd out on Roman history? Go do it. You want to go nerd out on the book of Genesis? Go do it. The history of the ancient Christian church? Go do it. No cost. It's made for Chris and you. Hillsdale.edu/Jesse. We'll be back.
Get the cure for rhinos. Weekdays with the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Was that the Jaws soundtrack, Chris? That's so dark right now. Now I'm freaked out. Everyone's freaked out. Anyway, we're back with John Conrad, Captain John Conrad. Talked a little bit about government corruption and media corruption, really, just a little bit ago. But we're focusing now on his particular area of expertise, one that fascinates me. It's always fascinated me. Shipping. So, John, you just laid out that China has 3,000 merchant ships. We have 83, and ours are completely undefended. So 83 Chinese missiles, and we have zero. Can you start with this? How did that happen?
Well, it's interesting. You had the Hillsdale College, because I was talking to Eric Prince, and he went to the Naval Academy, and he actually left the Naval Academy to go to Hillsdale because he thought he would learn more about ships there. So the Navy is really focused on the warships, the guns, the missiles. But what really makes a nation powerful is control of trade. 90% of everything comes on ships, and you have these choke points that you control. So Gibraltar, that's why the Panama Canal is so important, Greenland to get up to the Arctic, Singapore Strait. And, you know, the Navy's just been laser focused on warships, carriers, and they're strong. They're the best in the nation. But they've completely pushed the U.S. Merchant Marine out of their mind. They've cut out their entire budget. No one cares about it. They've outsourced a lot of the regulations to the absolutely corrupt U.N. maritime body in London, the IMO. And so, you know, China saw that. China doesn't necessarily care what it attacks. It goes after our weakest links. It wants to fill in the things we're really bad at. So it's put this enormous amount of money into shipbuilding, to trade, to controlling choke points by having partnerships with Iran, who then partners with the Houthis. So this is, you know, it's the Navy's laser focus on warships. And then there are procurement prompts, right? The Navy can only spend what they spent. And we used to build carriers of battleships. Battleships like the Brooklyn Navy Yard was a navy. It was a government shipyard with government workers. Now all of the Navy ships are built by corporations like HII or General Dynamics, and they have to go get money from Wall Street. Well, Wall Street found out it's more profitable to put money in Chinese shipyards because they have a higher turnover rate. You know, if the inventory is just sitting on the shelves for 6 years, you're not making money. So they pull money out of U.S. shipyards and put it over to China. And that's kind of the basics of how we got here.
Okay. So again, we're speaking with John Conrad. So if the money, the easy money is in Chinese shipping versus American shipping. So that's why our shipping's underfunded and China's is overfunded. Why? Is that a they have slave labor thing? Has it just come down to that?
No, it's, you know, these are big shipyards. You have to dig out, like, the graving dock. So the ship goes in, and then they flood out the water. It's big cranes, big industrial equipment, and that has a capital cost. So if you're going to buy a dry dock, you have to go to Wall Street and say, I need $10 billion for a dry dock. And then you build the dry dock, and you've got to maintain it for 20 years. You need a workforce. You got to build that equipment. That equipment rusts. It has a lot of money associated with it. But instead, you can hire someone like McKinsey Consultants to do give them $10 billion for a study on why our shipyards don't work. And then they complete the study and they give it to the DOD. And guess what? The problem is still there. So they got to go back to McKinsey and say, well, the problem's worse now. And McKinsey goes, hey, give us $20 billion. These are hypothetical numbers. I don't want to focus on McKinsey. It could be any of the defense contractors. But the big thing is if they do a study or if they do a piece of software or something else, they don't have to maintain it for the next 20 years. So they don't particularly want to build ships, Jesse. They would rather do studies and think tank reports and other things that they can generate revenue and not have the long-term maintenance costs.
Speaking with John Conrad. Okay, John, one more question and then I'll let you go. Tell me about icebreakers, why I should care, why they matter.
Well, you care about icebreakers because Donald Trump said the other day we are going to build 40, and this is a key component of the Greenland strategy. So there's the Greenland-Iceland-UK gap. If you've seen the movie Diplomat, the whole theory of that whole thing is the importance of this gap, and it really is, I don't particularly like that show, but it is that important because, you know, where if you control these choke points of the Red Sea and everything else, if we're able to shut them down, well, China can just go up into the Arctic, and Russia has 40 icebreakers. So we really need to come up with a maritime strategy to secure these choke points getting up the Bering Strait and the Greenland-Iceland gap. So we need these icebreakers to be able to go up there. And none of our warships, if we had to fight, if the Chinese Navy goes to hide up there or the Russian Navy, how are we going to get up there if we don't have icebreakers? So fortunately, Michael Waltz is the creator of the Ships for America Act, which is going to reinvest in shipyards and the merchant marine and those dirty logistics ships and things like fireboats, which we don't have in San Diego, and resulted in the big Bonham Richard fire. So he put this through Congress, and then Trump picked him for National Security Council. And, I can't go into details, but Trump has big plans, not just icebreakers, but other ships. And he did one more thing. He, instead of getting a Navy guy, and remember, they're very focused on that kinetic warfare, he got one of the best hedge fund managers in the world, John Phelan, to come up with a financial plan in order to amortize these maintenance and get that money flow stopped to China and redirected into the United States. So I'm telling you, Jesse, I can't reveal some of the, secret plans behind the thing, but I am extremely excited about what's coming.
John Conrad, that was freaking awesome. Thanks for being patient with us, making us smarter. John, real quick, plug your website, please.
gcaptain.com, and I'm on Twitter at John Conrad, all one word, Conrad with a K.
gcaptain.com. Go find him on Twitter. John Conrad, freaking awesome. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. I've got an icebreaker. Do you know that? You know what the ultimate icebreaker is? You walk up to somebody. Hear me out. You walk up to somebody and say, hey, do you have a cell phone? And they're going to say, well, yeah, I have a cell phone, because everyone answers yes, right? You always want to ask a question you know the answer to in sales. You say, hey, do you have a cell phone? And they look right back at you and they say, okay, yeah, I have a cell phone. Why? That's when you tell them, did you know that phone you're holding right now? Because they always grab their phone. You're funding communism. That's what you can tell them. It's the ultimate icebreaker. I'm sure it works great on dates, although I've never had the chance. And then what that does is it opens up a door to you to tell them about Pure Talk. You see, that's when you say, hey, look, it's just you and me in this elevator. I'm here to let you know you don't have to fund communism with your cell phone every month. You can switch to PureTalk. You can pay like half. You'll be on the same network so we can still talk to each other by phone if we end up getting together or whatever. But PureTalk is the way to go. See, that's what you call an icebreaker, Chris. That, or you can talk about your ice maker. Am I right? Anyway, PureTalk also has a free phone. You can tell them that right now. iPhone 14 or whatever. PureTalk is the best. Dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly. #250, say Jesse Kelly. We still have an hour left. Isn't that exciting? Can't believe I'm still alive. Hang on.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.